Welcome to another edition of the Bovada at Odds podcast. We promise no Taylor Swift clips in the show. If that's what you came here for, maybe pause, go listen to Taylor Swift. If you're listening on Spotify, then she'll get a royalty. She'll get 0.3% of a cent for every time you press play. I was tempting fate last night. I was tempting fate last week when anytime you referenced a lyric and my half asleep brain didn't catch on, I found the song and matched it. That was an editing cornucopia, I must say.
You're really flexing last week in the editing room. It was fantastic to hear after the fact.
You didn't expect it. And when you heard the first one, you were like, what? Where did that come from?
I was, you know what? It reminded me of the early days of Twitch streaming for NFL Sims. And we were being a little bit too liberal with some of the music we were playing. And I was just worried that we were going to get, a takedown notice from Spotify or Apple.
There you go.
But hey, listen, we roll the dice at Bovada at Odds podcast, and we're still here.
My two favorite YouTube stories. By the way, my name is Seth Everett. He is the head odds maker at BovadaSportsbook.com, Patrick Morrow. My two favorite YouTube flags. The first one was this guy, a colleague of mine, swore to me that the only way people listen to podcasts is on YouTube. Put your podcast on YouTube. Put your podcast on YouTube. So I have this podcast called The Hall of Justice. It's about superheroes and Star Wars and stuff. And Carrie Fisher had died. So we did a tribute episode to Carrie Fisher on that episode. This was a couple of years ago. Pre-COVID, I'm sure of it. So anyway, Carrie Fisher dies. And at the end of that podcast, I put 30 seconds of the love theme from Star Wars. It's the music that plays when Han Solo kisses Princess Leia, and okay. YouTube shut it down. I don't think I had hit submit, and YouTube shut it down. The other example is even worse. I've told you this story on the podcast before. In 2013, so 10 years ago, I worked with Prince on a project, and it was for a webcasting company. And we hosted a show that Prince produced. As part of his role as producer, he would send music to play on the show. Prince sent music to the show, and the only way we could do it is through YouTube. So we put it as an unmarked YouTube theme. Like, we didn't say this is a Prince song. Like, we did. It wasn't Little Red Corvette. It was some obscure Prince thing that he had sent it. It was like as if you sent me a video of yourself playing the guitar, but it was him.
Which I only done once.
We upload it to YouTube so we can play on this webcast, and bam, flagged. It's copyrighted from an artist. And I went, the artist gave it to us, and they didn't care. We still didn't win the appeal.
Yeah, that's... You know, it's interesting because I've heard other people say the same thing, like, you got to have your stuff on YouTube. And I think from a monetization point of view, like, yeah, YouTube seems to be the way to go. But I also, as someone who podcasts on the go, if that makes sense, like, right. I take it to the gym with me. I take it on, like, runs or hikes or whatever the case. YouTube's not very friendly for that, right? Like, you're going to bump something in your pocket. You're going to, I don't know how YouTube hasn't figured out how to minimize the window on the mobile and still be able to consume the content. Because sure, yeah, I'd consume it that way if that was the case. But yeah, Spotify and whatever else you're using, even Patreon, if you're using that on a mobile web app, you can still minimize that and listen to everything.
You can't diminish your phone. YouTube has always been kind of in the way. If you shut your phone down, you won't hear the thing anymore. It stops playing it. First of all, one of the things we teach in the podcasting class that I teach at Syracuse University, a podcast is a podcast and YouTube is a YouTube. If you're doing a video, now there are a lot of people that take YouTube videos, make them podcasts and vice versa. More power to you. But and I don't want to get into the weeds, but they get sloppy. You know, this is a tight ship we run here on the At Odds podcast. If we had to do a jump cut every time you and I edit something, whether it's the numbers on the odds or you know, a pronunciation of a name or anything. We would sound like bumbling idiots if I put out the raw file.
I have just stopped trying to pronounce names. I've given up entirely. That's your forte, Seth Everett. I totally am offloading that to you for the rest of this show.
Sunday, I went for a walk, like an exercise walk.
Yep.
And I had the Red Zone on my phone. And I had to hold it in my hand. And I hate that.
Yep.
Because every time I put the phone in the pocket, it would change to, you know, something else. It would shut off. It would deactivate. The only way to listen. And all I was doing with AirPods, listening to all the various announcers. Because that's my favorite thing about NFL Red Zone is the announcers. The highlights don't do it for me. You know, when Football Night in America or any of these NFL primetime or any, those highlights are, I don't need some guy voicing over them. I want the original play-by-play guys. I want to hear Ian Eagle, Jim Nance. I want to hear Andrew Catalan. I want to hear Spiro Dedis. I love all the different announcers. That's the thrill for me as a broadcaster. And the only way you could do this. So I was holding it in my hand while going for a walk, which is the weirdest.
That's terrible.
That was weird.
Yeah, that's... See, for me, and like going for a walk like that too, like that should be not just a physical exercise. That should be a mental exercise as well, right, in terms of being present. I think just holding your phone out like that, like...
Well, no, I wasn't holding it so I could see it. I was just holding it so it wasn't going in my pocket.
Okay. That's a little bit better.
It's weird. And I look like that guy. I look like the 15-year-old girl, like my mocking my kids and their friends, who literally, if you ask them to carry something, they will do so while holding their phones. They will not put their phone down. It's like literally attached to their hands. It's amazing how dependent they are. You know, Apple has all these updates all the time. And some of those are security updates, like do them. And to take the phone away from my child to just do the update and give it back to them, you would think I am an awful abusive father.
You need like a backup phone or something that you can like kind of like swap in when one needs the maintenance or the security update. You know, even if it doesn't actually work, just the act of having them hold on to something else, you know, they might feel like, you know, they don't have that separation anxiety anymore. Just, I honestly paint a screen on a brick or something like that and see if the kids can actually tell the difference. Just, I guess I haven't gotten any texts in a while, but put on, had a picture of a dog with like a frisbee in its mouth or something. I think they're on Instagram reels. It'll be fantastic.
That's true.
That's true.
All right. Switching to the NFL. Let's start there. Why does having Aaron Rodgers in the building make Zach Wilson look like the guy that played at BYU?
I think Aaron Rodgers only showed up because Taylor Swift was going to be there. I think he wasn't going to go there.
Yeah. Overlooked in that photo, by the way, is understand, it's Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. That's Deadpool and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty awesome. And Blake Lively and her sister Robin Lively, who is one of my wife's favorite actresses. Robin Lively is in Teen Witch. That's one of my wife's favorite movies. So she's looking at that photo. She's looking at that. So we saw that photo. We were like, I'm like, oh, Deadpool, Wolverine. My wife's like, that's Teen Witch. And all of a sudden my kids are like, what are you talking about? Taylor's there.
And, we had Kelsey's mother as well attend two games simultaneously on Sunday. And people were wondering who was the biggest kid on her.
Kelsey's mother sat next to Jake, the State Farm guy.
Then that's right. And I'm just wondering, you know, was she more wowed by Taylor Swift or Jake from State Farm? Because Taylor Swift, don't get me wrong, she can deliver the hits. But who's going to save you on car and home insurance? Not going to be Taylor Swift, Seth Everett. Just saying. Taylor has the wow factor. Jake's going to save you where it matters most.
Well, and now, you know, the TikTok algorithm is funny because I've never had Taylor Swift on my TikTok feed. Until now, because all these NFL people are posting things about Taylor Swift. And I saw an interview with Taylor Swift, and she said, what's a song that you wish you had written that you never did? And Taylor Swift, with a straight face, goes, the Friends theme. You know how many times that gets replayed? I thought that was funny. I said, Taylor Swift, nice job.
This the Friends theme.
And by the way, if the Bovada management's listening to this podcast, anytime you want to get Taylor Swift on the At Odds podcast, I'd get a lot of brownie points with the kids.
Taylor Swift on the podcast. If you want to drop Seth and I at one of her next shows, that's fine. We will do well, the heavy lifting there.
How about Vernon Maxwell, Taylor Swift? That's the same level. Pierre Garcon.
Why haven't they collabed yet? We can just get out of the way, give them the show for a half hour. We can give it to them for a couple weeks. We'll go travel. we'll do some market research and leave your if listeners make your voices heard. If you want this to be Vernon Maxwell and Taylor Swift, Bovada has the resources to make it happen. So I'm told.
Or you want to just get Robin Lively? Let's just talk to she was in Karate Kid Part 3.
Listen, she's got to be more affordable than Blake Lively.
She has to be. Ryan Reynolds met Blake Lively and they're happily married on the set of Green Lantern, the maligned movie that.
Yeah, and good for him getting a superhero do-over like that, because if you flop in that, a lot of people might think, okay, that's not a vehicle for you, but absolutely crushed it, of course, with Deadpool since. And yeah, no, he's had a fun little career. Good old Vancouver, Canada boy.
All right, let's take a look at the odds for this week, shall we?
I guess.
Well, the game of the week, if last week was Dolphins and Bills, the game of the week this week is the Sunday night game. The Dallas Cowboys travel to Levi's Stadium to take on the San Francisco 49ers. This is a chance for one of these two teams to really show themselves. It's a close line, and I know that it could be an even matchup. I'll throw it out this way. I don't think that game is close. I think that's a blowout. The only question is who wins.
Okay, so you're suggesting it's a blowout, but it could be either team blowing out. That's right.
I wouldn't be stunned if Dallas wins. Look, you want my opinion? I think San Francisco wins that game, but if they do, they win it by 3 touchdowns. They don't. This is not a field goal late to win the game.
Okay, so I'm inclined to agree that if San Fran wins, I can see a blowout there. I don't see Dallas beating San Fran in a blowout just because I think San Fran is just too well coached. They're not a team that just gets beaten for 60 minutes. You can beat them over 60 minutes, but beaten consistently over 60 minutes like that to the tune of a blowout, I just don't see it. I think the 49ers are maybe the best team in the league right now, definitely one of the top two or three coach teams in the league, if not the top coach team. So looking at the spread for this one, the 49ers are currently 3.5-point home favorites at Bovada. And I've got to say, credit to the Cowboys, who did an incredible, incredible job last weekend against the Patriots. I hate to use the term trap game, but that was something where, the line started to drop on the Cowboys late Sunday. They were 7, went down to 6, went down to 5. And, against a historically decently coached Patriots team with Bill Belichick there, I thought this could be a game where the Cowboys can get absolutely exposed, and they took care of business. They absolutely smashed the Patriots in a way that they're not used to being smashed. As it currently stands, the 49ers are taking roughly 80% of all bets right now at Bovada.
Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills may have turned a corner. They didn't look anything like the team that lost to the Jets in week one. They were so impressive in the victory over Miami. Now they play Jacksonville, but it's in London at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Go Gunners. Buffalo, Jacksonville.
Don't think I didn't catch that little affect you put on the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium there, Seth Everett.
Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, it's
a North London derby.
A North London derby. And Jacksonville will have, it's weird. These are neutral site games, but Jacksonville, they've already been out in London for a while now. They were there last weekend, and they're obviously sticking around, with their ownership ties with Shad Khan also owning Fulham. They've made it no secret that London is where they like to be. They're always first to raise their hands when the NFL is asking about who's going to be playing out there. So, and, it's actually kind of cool as well that the Jaguars are actually pretty decent now. Part of the allure, I think, originally for them to play out there as much as they did were they weren't so good in the last 5 years. And so losing one home game versus, the international exposure they got by playing in London, you know, that was probably a net positive for them. But this Jaguars team with Coach Peterson, with Etienne, with gosh, that incredible QB of theirs as well, they're good. They're a legitimately good team. They are running into a Bills team now that okay, has maybe quieted the doubters a little bit with the way they took care of the Dolphins last Sunday. You know, Josh Allen still got a little bit too much gunslinger in him for my liking. I think that maybe impacts them come playoffs, but probably not in a game like this. The Bills are 6-point favorites in London, and they're currently taking 90% of all bets at Bovada.
Let's switch gears quickly. College football, you know, the realignment talk still continues. My prediction is that still Florida State and Clemson, before the end of the season, find out that they're leaving the ACC. That's just a wild guess. Texas and Oklahoma are both leaving, but right now they have a massive game. And the way both teams are playing, this becomes a major playoff discussion for the old system.
Yeah, this is Oklahoma, Texas playing at noon at the Texas State Fair. This is a game that matters every single year just because the rivalry between the two teams. But this is, I'd say, the best both teams have been combined, at least in the last five, maybe close to 10 years. Texas comes into this one as the number three ranked team. Oklahoma's right there at number 12. Texas has very legitimate college football playoff aspirations this year, not just because of the quality of their own gameplay, but because of how broadly, dare I say, weak the rest of the top 25 appears to be this year. Alabama's lost. Georgia has played a couple really close ones that they absolutely could have lost. Outside of that, you have, you know, Ohio State hasn't looked particularly great. Michigan has looked okay in spurts. So it's such a wide open field that, you know, whoever wins this game has got a really, really decent chance of being one of the four teams in the last year of the four-team college football playoff. Looking at the actual odds themselves, Seth, Texas comes into this one as 7-point favorites over Oklahoma, and the action is split right down the middle at Bovada. Total is sitting 60.5.
Usually when the season starts, the realignment talk stops. Not this year. It's been still going. This stuff with the Pac-12 and the two remaining Pac-2 schools, that's been interesting. You know, they got an injunction to prohibit all the teams that are leaving for participating in a board of directors meeting. It was nasty. You know, if the Mountain West rebrands itself as the new Pac-12, what does that do to their status? What about their television contract?
Yeah, I got to say, though, one thing that made me laugh over the weekend, and it reinforced that I think college football has maybe some of the best commercials out there relative to their demographics. And Dr. Pepper, not a sponsor of the show, although we will happily have those conversations.
Sure.
They did a really good one with the mascot getting on the bus. And, you know, he's tearfully talking to this girl about realignment. And it's like, oh, you know, your team will never be any good. It's like, oh, I'll miss hating you. And you know what? I think what I love so much about college football is it simultaneously is very, very serious stuff, but doesn't take itself very seriously in how it presents itself sometimes. And I think that cascades to College game day being probably one of the best, if not the best, game day experiences that any sport or league puts together. And I think the commercials are there, the game day experience. When you go to any one of these games, I've been to a few college football games, and they're better than most NFL games I've ever been to. And I love it. It's wherever all these teams end up next year, we're still going to watch. We're still going to be betting on all this stuff. Where there's money involved, I think they'll ensure that some of the larger rivalries will figure themselves out as opposed to letting them go by the wayside. And from that point of view, most of these rich teams are going to get richer. We're seeing the players start to get a little bit of that money now. So it's a shame for tradition and whatever that means to a variety of people. But for someone like me, who's still going to see a lot of incredible great games every Saturday, I'm for it.
Well, one of the things, though, that people love about college football is leaving, and that is tradition. And tradition is a big part of college sports. And, you know, again, the move I'm most annoyed about is the California and Stanford going to the ACC. It makes no sense. SMU makes less sense.
Yeah, it is something to have some, you know, a few schools like right on the Pacific Ocean join a conference called the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Right, but, and you might want to rebrand these schools then. You know, like
rebrand the schools,
not the schools. I misspoke. Rebrand the conferences, not the schools.
Yeah.
And again, why do they have these names? Well, because of tradition. Well, wait a minute. Is tradition a big deal or a small deal?
That's yeah, we're gonna rebrand Stanford as MIT West.
Well, we've had the conversation before. It's going to be two power conferences and then the rest.
Yeah, we just call it Big Money One and Big Money Two Conference, and you know, let's not worry about the fancy names anymore. Although the SEC continues to reign supreme, and at least geographically, everyone that's there kind of makes a lot more sense than what's going to be happening with the ACC going forward. But oh well, that's the ACC's problem. They're not one of the power two remaining, so they've got to take what they can get. They got to call themselves whatever they can, and they'll figure out the rebranding eventually.
All right, let's quickly switch gears, and we kind of do this too often on the podcast, right? Like right we're near the end, we bring up baseball. Their postseason starts this week. The games have started already. By the time this podcast comes out, a couple of notes that I thought were interesting. Number one, Buck Showalter, a guy who is proud of his baseball pedigree. He has built franchise after franchise. He built the Yankees pre-dynasty. He built the Diamondbacks that got to the World Series. He didn't manage, you know, after that. He brought the Orioles back to prominence. He brought he's done a ton. They announced that he was not returning. And he met with the media after the game, and somebody said, did you resign or did you get fired? He says, if you know me at all, you know I never quit on any team. Took a shot right at the team, and I thought that was very classily done. The other baseball note, Tim Wakefield passed away, a true stalwart of those Red Sox teams. And just a really nice guy. I love dealing with him. He's one of the last guys to really throw the knuckleball. I know R.A. Dickey did it a decade ago, but really the knuckleball is kind of being phased out. He mastered the knuckleball and threw it in playoff games, which was impressive to say the least. Kurt Schilling, who is a dick, revealed that he was battling cancer against Tim Wakefield's wishes. That's just a classless act. And Kurt Schilling's an idiot, but Tim Wakefield, he basically was sick for about 6 weeks and died. And it's really, really sad. And I feel bad for him. I really do. I feel bad for him, his family, and of course the whole Red Sox family. Tim Wakefield, one of the real, real good guys.
I watched Wakefield a lot growing up, being a Jays fan whenever they would cross paths. And I mean, you could see, kind of sort of really on TV that pitch and how it worked and how it broke down for you. Seth, I was lucky enough once to have behind home plate seats at the Rogers Center in Toronto one game while Wakefield was pitching.
Oh, cool.
And actually seeing it from behind home plate, how that ball danced, the way he was able to make it dance on a day where the roof was open and there was just a slight breeze to make it. I don't know how, when that pitch was on, anybody was able to make contact with it. Truly incredible to be able to witness right in real time as it was happening. Pancreatic cancer. That is, that's like a 99% death rate. It usually happens quick also because it's incredibly difficult to detect. I lost my godfather about a year and a half ago from that, and that was something where, you know, five, 6 weeks earlier, it was the same kind of things. I'm not really feeling so great. And then boom, that's as quick as it goes. So, I can't really echo your sentiments loudly enough about Kurt Schilling. What a scumbag. It seems like even when it's been, you know, a whole month or two before he said or done something stupid, he's now gone and done this. And
I have hated him really for 20 years. 20 years.
It's a remarkable shame to tarnish someone who otherwise had an incredible playing career. Like I try and separate the performance of an athlete versus who they are as a person, because I genuinely have very, very few heroes in sports, but it really is unfortunate that again, he's showing his ass, as the kids like to say.
Just awful. The average time of a 9-inning major league game dropped to 2 hours, 40 minutes. The first year of the pitch clock, that is a 24-minute decrease. It was also batting average, outlawing the shift, and the most stolen bases in nearly 40 years.
Yeah, all makes sense. That's what we all kind of predicted based on the rule changes, that pitchers would be out of sorts a little bit defensively. The shift not being available would impact teams that were otherwise pretty good at sorting out batter spray charts. So it makes sense. I mean, baseball got what it wanted. I think for the casual fan, these games resolving much sooner is also good. We all have shorter attention spans in 2023, not just in baseball, but across the board. So it makes sense that they went in the direction that they did. I think they got the results they wanted. And now we've got playoff baseball. You know, I was just thinking, you said 2 hours, 40 minutes. I was thinking, I don't know if I've watched 2 hours and 40 minutes of baseball so far this year. No. But with playoffs coming, I will. I will get back into it.
The pitch clock is staying in the playoffs. Here's a record. There were 9 3.5-hour games this entire season, down from a record 390 in 2021.
I think so. With the pitch clock, that's staying, but the extra innings, man on second base, that's not staying in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, that they get rid of, and that's an idiotic rule. Baseball's clock will remain the same for the postseason. Last year, a 9-inning postseason game took 3 hours and 23 minutes. There were 9 3.5-hour games all season. And two teams in the postseason play the fastest. Miami had the fastest average at just under 235. The Orioles and Padres topped the majors at 244. So at least the Padres sucked fast.
Yeah, at least if you're bad, you know. You know what that just reminded me of?
I couldn't resist.
No, you know what it is, though? It's the max power way. You go, but Dad, isn't that the wrong way? Yeah, but faster.
All right. Enjoy the postseason, folks. Enjoy all the football. For Patrick Morrow, I'm Seth Everett. This is the Bovada at Odds podcast. We'll see you next week.
Take care, folks. We'll be right back.